Good evening and welcome. You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network at republicbroadcasting.org. Hour two of the broadcast here on this Monday, the 18th of March, 2024. I'm your host, Richard Carey, and this is Beyond the Official Narrative. We have Paul Edward Stevenson, my regular Monday co-host, and of course, catch his show. If you haven't, folks, just yesterday, Paul actually relocated to a different time slot. You folks should be aware, because Paul had been Saturday mornings, you know, the second broadcaster Saturday mornings previously here with his broadcast Last Man Standing. Now he's 1 p.m. Central on Sundays. So that's 1 to 2 Central Last Man Standing with Paul Edward Stevenson. And yeah, I was talking about this Michael Jackson song, Paul. I sent you the full lyrics and also the little excerpt where, you know, he mainly makes these references, but it's called They Don't Care About Us. It's got a really good vibe to it, you know, it's a good beat and
No, I know the song, yeah.
Yeah, oh, okay. So yeah, that the one part in it, beat me, hate me, you can never break me, will me, thrill me, you can never kill me, chew me, screw, sue me, everybody do me, kick me, kike me, don't you black or white me. So
I didn't realize that those lyrics were in there, to be honest.
Yeah. Like kind of fast, well, he did, so you really have to be catching it, you know, someone paying attention a lot to just the lyrics intently, really, to be able to catch it. Yeah, the references there. But, I mean, yeah, he had been through a lot in the industry already, and many suggest, I mean, he had a lot of issues, you know, growing up as in a musical family from a little kid on stage singing all the time, not having a normal childhood. Jackson 5, you know, he was the youngest child of the Jackson 5 and all that. And so, I mean, you know, the fact that he had that Wonderland thing, we're told a lot of little kids he let come in his mansion, hang out, interact with. I don't know. Maybe he just wanted to connect with the younger generation. And he felt so isolated. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I tended to think that he was a bit ultimately, you know, harmless. You know, probably his behavior wasn't, you know, particularly normal. But I think that was him trying to recreate a childhood he never had. I don't think there was any malice in the guy. I think, you know, when you listen to other people who've known Michael Jackson, he seemed like a pretty gentle kind of a guy, you know, okay, neurotic and all sorts of issues, but, you know, no malice in him, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, no, very well put. I agree completely. And so I think that, yeah, he was perhaps framed with all these allegations to be tarnished because he messed with the Jews. Just like we're hearing now with this, what Candace Owens was saying there. At the same time, I mean, there are just so many levels and dimensions to what my points were about Stu. Nonetheless, this is all good information that he's bringing out to show how much of hypocrites these people are. That doesn't mean that we can't be racially aware and all this, recognize differences and why separation is best for everyone to live and let live the best to their people's abilities. That doesn't mean you can't interact and all that, you know.
Well, but, you know, the gospel, Paul, the apostle called the Jews the enemy of the gospel and of all mankind.
Okay, well then, well, hey, and I see we have a caller already. So yeah, let's hear what he has to say. And our thoughts on that. James in Vancouver is here with us, Paul. James, hey, how you doing? Hey, good to hear from you tonight.
Good afternoon. When I was in merchandising in Taiwan in the 1990s, my clients were looking to do a merchandising deal with Michael Jackson. And I got on the phone to L.A. At that time, now, he had changed his manager. His manager at the time was a gentleman by the name of Jim Morey. Okay. Now, I never talked to him directly. I talked to his secretary, And I said, look, here's what we do. We want to use Michael Jackson's image and that kind of thing. And can you hook me up with his, the people that do his legal work? And they kind of hummed and hawed. She says, well, who's this for? I said, well, we're in Taiwan. Oh, and then she was talking to his manager right there on the spot. And I heard him over the speakerphone says, yeah, give him the lawyers, right? Because at that time in 1993, Michael was pretty hot. In fact, Michael did come to Taiwan that year. I actually met his parents in the after show. And, they had a law firm, I think it was in Century City, and it had the cover, the header on the fax was 10 lawyers across and 10 lawyers deep. This had at least 100 lawyers in it, right? And, I was doing this research yesterday when I was listening to Robert Rabel's show. And I don't know, did you know that in 2008, Michael Jackson switched from Jehovah's Witness to the, became a Muslim? I think it was Nation of Islam.
Okay, no. Yes. Never heard about that. Paul,
well,
did you ever hear about that?
No, I haven't.
Well, go ahead, James.
Well, that's a big change because, you see, this is all about the money. So he's starting to dole money to Farrakhan or, whoever, right? And it's not put in the news. I just found it out yesterday. I didn't know it back in 2009 because I had been out of the business. And these are how these things go. Now, you mentioned the rabbi, right? And I looked him up, and apparently, according to what I read, he was the rabbi for Michael Jackson, and I don't know the details of that. But making that shift in 2008, and he had this big date coming up in London with a lot of live performances, which would have been phenomenal in price, right? They could have done movies with it. They could have done all kinds of things with it. So this is what happens in the merchandising or when you're a big star. Everybody wants some percentage of what you've got, you see. So This is the background for what happens in life, you see, whether it's war or you're trying to be a rock star. I thought I'd call you guys up and let you know. I guess, by the way, did you know that my last call was recorded by Murr in Wisconsin, and she did it on her Sunday show? So Murr is probably listening right now. So hello, Murr. Back to you.
Nice. Oh, very good. Nice. But I mean, James, I don't know. Do you see what I mean about how, I never heard of the Stu Peters until after COVID lockdowns happened.
Right.
And then suddenly he's covering all of these people. You remember the times since then when I was covering it on the station, mentioning the different people he's had on. And then suddenly he's like, the darling of views, on whatever video platform. It's amazing how fast he got so big. And he had this past as a white rapper, and then he was a bounty hunter, kind of like that. That dog, the bounty hunter, a Hollywood guy. But he was a bounty hunter. I forgot to mention that to you guys. If you don't know, he was so Stu Peters was a white rapper, then he was a bounty hunter, literally. And then he moves over to this stuff when COVID comes out. Isn't talking about the tribe or race ever for a couple of years here. And now suddenly, so I don't know. What do you think, James? Do you see why I'm at least just raising an eyebrow to keep an eye in the future, where this guy's trying to steer people? Is he going to start talking about the CCP next or what?
Well, I appreciate you asking me this because I think his coffee and donuts are paid for by the deep state. And I think he's a Judas goat par excellence. And I wouldn't trust him as far as I could throw him, because he's looking for people. And a lot of these guys are looking for people.
James, how about when he mentions pubic hairs claiming on the rabbi's face? I mean, that's so childish.
Well, I wouldn't
They were trying to tarnish their image almost by throwing in something like that to me. That sounded suspicious.
No.
What do you think?
Yeah, he's got protection. And after the show, he calls up the rabbi and said, well, Shmuley, how did it go? What do you think? Am I convincing enough? And you see what I'm saying? So, no, you don't do, I don't mean you, but you see what I'm saying? There's repercussions.
Yeah, everything else seemed so smooth. And then he goes into that pubic hair thing. He and the other guy he had talking
with.
Yeah,
no, with him. No. Totally, yes, you're right. Absolutely, totally inappropriate.
Yeah.
Even if
you just ruined everything
thing,
you just presented by throwing that in. That's my thought. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, I think it's, you're right. You're absolutely right. So, oh, by the way, let me ask you this question before I drop off. What do you think the chances are of Netanyahu whacking Schumer? Netanyahu's lost face. You see?
He has well, Schumer's supposed to, he mentions how his name means like a guardian. You know, he's supposed to be a protector of Israel, right? So why? Why would he
Schumer?
Be so upset? What did I miss in the news?
No, look, Netanyahu believes he is Israel. This is one of the points I wanted to make in my call. Benny Netanyahu believes that somehow he's maybe the Messiah, right? Now, he's not going to say that, but in his heart of hearts, and then to be told by Schumer to back down, you see, I think there's going to be a real upheaval, like Henry Kissinger would say, years of upheaval. See what I'm saying? What do you think?
Paul, let's get your thoughts, sir.
Yeah.
No, I think it's for domestic consumption for the American audience and, you know, for people who are outraged because Biden is trying to, you know, obviously sort of thread the needle with this, keeping the money coming in from AIPAC. I mean, as far as I know, far from him being out of line with, the Israeli lobby, apparently what he said was actually more or less written for him by AIPAC, believe it or not.
Schumer's statement. Well,
I'm saying it's, you know, it was supported. What he said, it's not like he came out as some outraged individual. What he said was...
Mm-hmm. No, Benny was angry, though. He was angry.
Huh?
Netanyahu was angry. Can you tell?
Oh, well, Netanyahu's probably angry. But, you know, I think at the end of the day... They're trying to thread this needle of being wanting to be perceived as not tolerating or being condemning of what's happening in Israel because they can't hide it, but at the same time keep the money coming in. So it's the whole thing is just a farce, really. It's a whole pile of theater, you know.
Mm-hmm. You don't think there's something at a deeper level that could happen? You know, in New York City. Go ahead. Maybe you got another call. Yeah, go ahead.
I think that there's, you know, about 80 or 85% of Israel, they might not like Netanyahu, but if they got rid of Netanyahu, they'd put another guy in there who'd just be as extreme. They
just
support what he does.
Just as hardline.
Yeah, they support what he does. People seem to think that maybe, there's all these liberals and, you know, these people in Israel who are, you know, beside themselves with what this evil, murdering Netanyahu is doing. But as far as I know, that is not the case. It's like, it's not just a few rotten apples over there. They're right behind him. It's just they don't like him because there's all sorts of problems with him, corruption and other stuff. And what he was doing before October 7th with the courts and all that. But as far as his policy towards the Palestinians are concerned, they're right there and, you know, right behind him.
Well, I can sort of...
And so is Schumer, I am sure. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the point. So is Schumer. So what he's saying is purely for the United States domestic audience. In fact, more specifically, Biden voters in an election year. That's what's going on there. So they're desperate, so they're going to have to try and say something.
Well, Schumer doesn't want to lose the election because
exactly.
The situation in Israel looks bad. But the point I'm trying to make here is that Netanyahu, he doesn't care, I don't think. So anyway.
No. Right. Well, he's fighting for his own survival. You know, he needs to keep that whole thing going so that he can avoid possibly even prison, from what I can gather.
Yeah. Well, all right. you guys have other callers and such. I will say adieu until next time.
Yeah, so, well, we do have one
other caller. Richard, are you there?
Yeah.
Sorry?
Yeah, I'm here. And, yeah, we always do appreciate your input, and thanks for calling. Yeah, no, we have one other caller. I don't know. I mean, if you want to stick around,
sure.
You know, you're welcome to. We have Andy in Texas joining. Andy, hey, welcome, and what's on your mind?
Well, hey, gentlemen, thanks for taking my call. You know, the one thing that really scares me about what's going on in the world right now is that people are easily distracted. I mean, I think the person who has their mind in the right mindset realizes that politicians and politics are not our answer to what's going on in our world right now. And so yet they're still glued to the TV to see how Donald Trump's coming out in his court cases and all this stuff. I think there's a whole lot of cannon fodder going on right now, and I think it's going on all around the world for us just to keep us, because, okay, so we figured out that the United States is the hardest country to take down. At least that's what we're thinking, is that they figure we're loaded with guns and ammo and stuff, so we're going to be the hardest place to take down and whatnot. And so they're really going out of their way to keep us distracted with the, and don't get me wrong, people are dying in Ukraine, people are dying in Palestine and stuff, but it almost seems like they're doing it just for the American people so they can keep our minds off of this. There's so many different directions they have our minds going, and while our minds are on this stuff, they're doing all this other stuff, like, you know, passing hate speech stuff. I mean, Canada just did one. I just saw Press for Truth, and he said that there anybody who speaks well of fossil fuels, this is a bill, they didn't pass it, it's a bill in their little legislation, if you speak well of fossil fuels, you can be arrested. I mean, so meanwhile, while we got our whole minds going on, these people are, you know, stealing more, not money, because that's not money, but we think of it as money, but they're stealing all this stuff, and they're buying everything they can. It's what we're in right now is a fire sale. They're buying everything because they have a fiat currency, and the people who own the Federal Reserve also own everything else, and so they're buying everything. And so, but we're just going to sit back and see how this thing comes out, and that's the way I feel, that we're not going to do nothing. I mean, we'll rise up when it comes to our families or neighbors and stuff, but we're just not going to do anything. They've got us so tamed. How do y'all feel about that?
Paul, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, you said a lot there. What specifically?
Well, how do we go with that we're just going to sit back and not do anything, that we're lackadaisical, you know, that we're just waiting for the tyranny to come to us. We're not going to try to fight tyranny. How about that?
Yeah, well, I think that the tyranny has come, hasn't it?
Well, I know, but nobody's fighting it. We're waiting until it really gets bad, and next thing you know, you go down, I go down, the next guy goes down and stuff. We're just waiting for it. Nobody wants it. There's no 1776 coming up anytime soon. So that's our demise, is that we can't organize or come together.
I think it'll probably have to get bad enough. When it gets bad enough, it will. It's just not bad enough for most people yet. Because, you know, despite everything we speak about, you know, life, for the most part in the West, you know, sort of rolls on relatively normally. You know, okay, the COVID thing was weird for a lot of people, but for most people, you know, they go to work, they come home, you know, they have a family, they're getting on with it. Okay, there's, you know, the inflation and all's there. But they just get on with it. They're not, you know, they're not your average kind of RBN listener or host, you know, looking at these things all the time with great interest. expressed, if you spoke to people about and said, you know, what do you think of Vladimir Putin's role in de-dollarization? You know, they would look at you as if you've got three heads. They would say, what? I have no idea what you're talking about. Or, you know, still a lot of people, they get a few clips on the news for things and, you know, on mainstream media, and that's about all they get. That's where they get their information. They don't sit around thinking about these things too much. But the day will come, and it'll usually be a financial crisis for most people that will then cause some sort of action. I was actually listening to Douglas McGregor earlier. His organization, I think, is a good one. If you're in the United States, Our Country, Our Choice, because, you know, he's trying to build something. He's trying to build some sort of response, identify problems, and then, come up with, like, some responses to it. Because the truth of the matter is, you know, the institutions have been sewed up so successfully against people that it's very difficult to know what to do, you know? And when you try, there's all sorts of divide and conquer tactics and all sorts of methods of suppression and intimidation that they have at their disposal, which makes it very difficult. So it's very frustrating to people. People are certainly aware increasingly of the facade of democracy, that, you know, because there's no choice. I mean, you have a unit party over there in many ways, but it's much more acute even over here. This is why George Galloway got elected. So people are very frustrated in terms of what can I do, because usually people, I think, well, when I'm going to go to the voting, the voting booth and get these people out of here. But, you know, when you get the same people in again, well, then you realize you haven't got a choice. So it's frustrating to know what to do, really. I mean, most people just don't have the power or the resources to get organized. But the time will come when they will, I believe. And you know, there are signs of it in some ways. You know, it's just, I don't think it's got bad enough yet.
James, do you want to respond to what Andy and Paul were stating?
Well, my strategy in particular is I'm hooked into Chinatown. And the Chinese have a knack for survival. And after living with them for more than 40 years, I've adopted some of their tenets, Xunzi and the Art of War. So obviously you would start with prepping for food, keeping some food on hand. You want to prep for energy. You got to have a source to keep warm in the wintertime, something like that. Weapons, if you can have them. These kind of basic things, or if something is catastrophic. That's the first thing I think about. Back to you.
Andy?
Well, no, hey, I'll leave you guys with this. So I think the most important thing that people need to understand and actually figure out is that you're not living under some sort of government anymore. Everything right. is just, right. you know, beside itself. But the thing is that you're living under an agenda, and that tribe owns you. And that tribe is very strong, and this is what they've been trying to do for years and years and years and years. And we don't even know if they've done it before, because they've been, far as we know, they've been kicked out of at least 109 countries, and they're still running the show. Every time they get to come back into a country, the first thing they do is infiltrate the monetary system, and then they become controllable and whatnot. And, I mean, this whole Federal Reserve destroyed this country. I don't care. If you want to look at a root process of destruction, it's that, because that allowed them to destroy the gold standard, destroy anything and everything that we had, any kind of values in life. But they were able to make it a fiat currency and buy every damn thing that the world had to offer, because the dollar was the world's currency. So, I mean, if people can't see that, this is, therein lies the problem. So you were talking earlier about how the, you know, people just want to go to their schools and pick their kids up and go to the soccer game and then wash, rinse, and repeat and do it again. Everybody wants that. That's exactly what we want, but that's not what's going on right now. And these are the people that are going to screw us all up, because these are the people, A, that aren't prepared for anything to go wrong. These are the people who think, you know, okay, my budget's $500 more this month, which is really dramatic for a bunch of families, but it's $500 more a month, and I can absorb that. And they just keep pushing on. Like, life has, they don't ask why it's $500 more. They don't understand. They don't even want to look under the skin of anything. And therein lies what I think most of the population in the United States is. They're just a bunch of people who just want to live their lives. We can't discredit these people. They just want the lives that they understood and they get. Their entire thing, your wife, kids, a house, car, a boat, whatever, and that's what they want, and they can't necessarily you know, even have time, conceive to have time, because they make their life so busy. It's just such a routine, and therein lies, I think, the problem in America, is that people simply, they don't want to know, let alone, you know, even if they watch the news, they just kind of brush it off. Like, well, that'll fix itself. I mean, we got to give us some reality here. We're actually quite alone on RBN. And you know, there's probably 35, 40 million people in this country that are fairly well alive. I'm just guessing that are fairly well awake. And even have a clue that there's something wrong, because these people absorb these atrocities that are going on financially and whatnot, because again, they just want to live.
Yes, but I mean, we're definitely having our societies just torn apart through multiple means at the same time. Most people don't even realize the scale of any of it, or the motives, and that's exactly. That's really, I think, what you're getting at, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. But the thing is that we've got so little people, they're actually really, really willing to even look at the way life really is. And, you know, I've come to a point in my life where I've been doing this radio listening forever. It took me a while to call in, you know, like 8 years until I called in and stuff. And I started thinking, hey, I've found something out in this and that. We all feel like that. And I don't have any answers at all. As soon as you figure out that you've got some answers to some things and shit, excuse the language.
Yeah, please.
That's when you... That's when you need to relook through all the stuff that you've evaluated, you know?
Right. Okay, well...
Nobody knows everything.
We're about to hit that bottom of the hour break. Well, thank you, Andy. I appreciate your input, sir. And folks, please support the station. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on that donate page. We'll be right back.
The truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Charles de Gaulle once said, actually, it's difficult to envision in this regard any other criterion, any other standard than gold. Yes, gold, which does not change in nature, which can be made into either bars, ingots, or coins, which has no nationality, and which is considered in all places and all times the immutable and fiduciary value par excellence. So when the question is, why gold? It's simple, my friends. The answer to that question is simply, why not? Like it or not, precious metals will always be the world's reserve currency. Even though nations do not define their currency by their worth in, say, gold, individuals still buy gold and silver to protect themselves from inflation. The more money a nation's central bank pours into the economy, the less valuable its currency, the dollar, is, which means the price of everything else rises. $21 up for a bag of dog food. Seeing that the dollar is cheap, that's why the cost of everything goes up. It's because the buying power, the value of the dollar has tanked. It's worth nothing. And the gold that your family would have owned in 1907 will buy at least the same amount of goods, if not far more. William McPhee once stated, it's extraordinary how many emotional storms one may weather in safety if one is ballasted with ever so little gold. The truth about money, gold versus cash in a crisis, gold, a valuable thing to store, the power of gold in times of crisis, historical sketch of paper currency. Oh, and beware the ides of rare coin dealers and Alan Greenspan's speech on gold and economic freedom. How interesting. I'm going to give you gold and silver in 5 easy lessons. Seeking out the most efficient and most secure route to owning gold and converting it into widely accepted currency is the next best thing to enjoying gold-backed currency, my friends. In a world of central bankers hell-bent on devaluing our savings, you need to own private gold standard. Contact me, Jeffrey Bennett at Kettle Moraine Limited, by calling our phone number at 602-799-8214. That's 602-799-8214.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Are back, folks, beyond the official narrative here on Republic Broadcasting. Richard Carey here with Paul Edward Stevenson, and we have James in Vancouver still with us as well. And, you know, I just want to point out, though, that I mean, and this is one thing I was just noticing when looking at Stu Peters there. I mean, okay, you know, he's saying some things that do damage, added in with all of the good talking points, clearly. In addition to that, of course, well, pointing out all of these black people, you know, if you're going to talk about anything related to certain people who are claiming to be Jews, as he's saying, you know, make sure you throw in that angle. Rather than anything that's what's more racial. But I mean, racial is really the thing that people are afraid to touch on. Like, people want to talk about the threats in this country, and they're claiming it's from foreign countries, like the CCP or something, rather than just that, you know, black and brown people have different differences, not just their culture, but their brain wiring, average IQ, impulse control, or so many things you could go into. The point is that high-trust societies will not stay high-trust societies when you have this huge influx of them. And the fact that you're changing the demographic severely away from white is something you can complain about in Europe and in the United States. You should be able to. And the fact that you're not is the reason that this is going to be a slow boil of the frog. I mean, right now, and I'm going to cover this more tomorrow. I mean, in Haiti is like the film Mad Max, okay? The third film, Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome, for that matter, at this point. And they're descended into cannibalism, some of them. All right. Meanwhile, they're going to be heading for the Florida border, right where I am, Paul. You know, one of the most conservative states here, you know, with a conservative white traditional values and culture here. And, you know, yeah, we're seeing photos and on some of these pieces about it, showing people fleeing from the gangs, you know, Haitians and Port-au-Prince relocating, you know, because so to think that the only people you're going to get here are the ones fleeing the gangs, not some of the gang members themselves. Or so, I mean, this cannibalistic behavior just shows how these are incompatible cultures. And you got to call a spade before it's too late, you know. Over in your country, all right, found this great example here. Senior BBC employee branded white people a parasitical deviant breed. Okay, this was, what, Dawn Cueva and a coordinator at BBC Three. And then, well, a man got 2 years in prison for sharing stickers warning about illegal migrants replacing Europeans. It was a right-wing British activist handed a 2-year sentence. Intended to stir up racial hatred was the crime, you know, in the UK there. You know, just stickers with anti-immigration mottos, such as "We will be a minority in our homeland by 2066. Mass immigration is white genocide. Intolerance is a virtue, and white lives matter." 34-year-old husband and father, Paul.
Yeah, I know. So, you know, this is why they're sort of focusing on this extremist stuff at the moment as well. So anybody who, you know, tries to push back on anything, well, they criminalize it. That's what I said at the start. At the start of the show.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, there are just a lot of ways that, you know, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't, almost.
Yeah, exactly. But you see, that's why they bring in this type of legislation, because they say, oh, it's disruptive to our values. And so the whole thing boils down to basically do what we say. We decide what our values are. We decide what we allow and what we don't allow, and we criminalize anything which is a threat to us. You know, that's as simple as that. That's what it's all about. When Rishi Sunak on the steps of Downing Street talks about the quotes more than alarming situation in Rochdale. Where George Galloway won a dominant vote there to become an MP again after 8 years or something. Well, he's talking about, well, who's it alarming to? It's alarming to him and his little buddies and those who pull his strings. You know, so it's not alarming to anybody else. And so you can get yourself in all sorts of trouble simply by attempting to have any kind of pushback. So yeah, that's why, as I say, they sew up the institutions and they bring in these hate speech laws and they bring in this new extremism. That's not a law, but you know, it's the camel's nose under the tent when it comes to essentially eradicating any kind of political opposition, which is why I find so many people are so disgusted and so sick and tired of this demonization of Vladimir Putin, because they mock him and say, oh, look at Putin. He said, like, oh, he's had a fifth term or something like this. This wasn't a fair election, well, blah, blah, blah.
Notice how they take little sound bites of him, like from his speech. I mean, Putin warns of full-scale World War III if West sends troops to Ukraine. I have for a headline here. Okay, in his speech, a full-scale World War III is quote-unquote possible should any Western troops enter Ukraine. Incidentally, I mean, and I heard John Moore covering this with his guys this morning on RBN. You know, they're saying a lot of these missiles and equipment are being sent. You know, training manuals are only in English. You really have to have a lot of training and skill to maintain this stuff, and that they're convinced our troops are already considerably over there. With that equipment that's being sent, that you wouldn't have Ukrainians as little training as they have and not fluent in English and what have you, being able to even deal with the stuff we're sending. A lot of people are convinced we've had people there for quite a while, and it's questioned how much, you know, they've been already involved. But Putin would have to know this. I mean, he seems very... it shouldn't have had to drag out this long, you know. And you think back to even like examples of anything. I mean, I heard covered this weekend about someone was talking about Vietnam, you know, how anytime that there was a good opportunity, you know, they were told to pull back. It was meant to be dragged out. James, what do you think about Putin and this point?
Well, didn't Putin say, I heard today that he considers that this is World War III on the brink, and he's ready for nuclear war. I don't know who's going to call his bluff here.
That seems like more of the Western soundbite. Again, they like nitpick from long speeches, you know, something that they could construe isolated to seem aggressive. Right, Paul?
Well, let me ask you a question. This Haitian onslaught invasion of the United States, did you know that Mayor Eric Adams, they call him Swagger Man Without a Plan, he said that New York City is the Port-au-Prince of the United States of America and welcome you all here. Did you hear that?
Oh,
it was reported the last couple of days. 77 WABC, Curtis Sliwa. He'll tell you, right? This is all by design. And this whole Haitian thing is nothing more than stinks of Langley and the CIA. Who's paying for the boats? Who's paying for the transportation?
Yeah, I mean,
who's
come
paying
on.
For the box lunches?
They open up two prisons. They open up two prisons with the most hardened criminals. You know, everything's chaos, and now we're welcoming them into our borders, and don't you say anything possibly negative about these people, especially considering that they're not white.
And now every day on the subway in New York City, there's slashings and shooting. It's a mess, and they've got all these guys, illegal migrants, and they're raising hell, right? And this is done by the deep state, George Soros, you name it. Because they're trying to wreck America and then buy it back for 5 cents on the dollar.
To be fair, though, I mean, even with these conditions here, finally, they have with these cannibalistic, violent gang member Haitians coming into Florida. I mean, only now will we feel only now will we feel the full force of what places like London and Paris have already been dealing with. From the Africans and Middle Easterners, honestly, Paul.
Well,
I mean, I have to say, I mean, you guys seem like you're a bit ahead of us. You know, some of your countries there.
Well,
yeah,
you know,
certainly
in terms
of demographic shifts,
that's
for sure.
See what I'm getting at?
No, I missed that, James. I was asking Paul for a comment, and you talked over him. But what did you say?
I'm just saying the news says things about the gangs in Haiti causing trouble. It's not the gangs in Haiti. It's the deep state of the United States wants to bring him here. See?
I'm suspicious of that as well. A lot of this is engineered.
Yeah. It's all like Mike Gatti says. It's all the NSA psyops. Nothing is in our mind that hasn't been put there by the bloody media. Mike said that on your show, I think. You were talking to him on the weekend or something. See?
Yes. Yeah. Well, and is there something else that you want to add, Paul? To James's comment?
No, I was going to say, you know, we criticize, you know, the Russian elections, and we scoff and we mock and we laugh over here at our media and, Putin. But listen, even if it was totally rigged, we're no better. In fact, you know, they have one guy, you know, who stays in power. We have the facade of different faces, but it's the same agenda. It's the same policies. Nothing changes except the names and the face and but nothing else. So why we should have just kept Tony Blair in power for 40 years, really, you know? It's the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, that's all. And, you know, I was just listening to some Klein on the break, and one of our little sort of centrist right types media over here, some American genius, talking about, and not only that, he said, but, you know, I you know, this whole narrative that Russia, that Ukraine's losing the war, it's not true. It's not true. You know, Ukraine is having all sorts of successes that we're not talking enough about. I mean, this is what I mean. These people, they just never seem to acknowledge reality. You know, even the mainstream media is now sort of largely having to acknowledge that, you know, Ukraine's in bad shape. But this guy, no, he's talking about the oilers. They've hit these oil refineries and they've had these incursions. Yeah, they had an incursion, for example, where it was the most pathetic. These were like 30 special operations guys, apparently, you know, did an incursion into Belgorod, and they just got completely obliterated, and so did the Ukrainians who came in to help them. I mean, what do they think they're doing? Taking a village in Belgorod with 30 soldiers? You know, that you heard that right. Not 30,000, 30. I mean, what is the point? That is a death sentence. I mean, even if it took the Russians a week or a month to get there, if you plan to occupy that village, you've just, you know, signed your own death warrant. I mean, it's only a matter of time. And it didn't take long, and they were all killed, most of them anyway, I think. And some of them were fleeing, and there was remotely planted mines, so they couldn't even retreat. And then whenever their buddies came to try and rescue them, they were all blown up in these mines as well. I mean, and this is the kind of victories this guy's talking about. And they did hit some oil refineries, and they caused a couple of fires. Big deal, you know. But the media have pumped out all sorts of fake news and fake pictures and made it look like they're causing the Russians all sorts of problems. But from what I can understand, it's not causing them any problems at all. And this is all just pure desperation to make it look like, you know, they're still fighting and they've got a chance. It's so cringe, and there's just so many, it's so tragic. Just more and more dead bodies piling up, you know?
Well, I see we have another caller. Well, James, if you want to stick around, though, I can't be sure if, you know, he might want to address something that you were saying. We have Joe in Florida. Let's bring on Joe.
Well, let's go to the caller.
Yeah. Yeah, so sounds good. Joe in Florida. Hey, Joe, how's it going?
Hey, Richard, Paul, and James. Good to hear all three of you tonight. Great. Yeah, you know, actually, the quote that I heard, I'll paraphrase it. So you were talking about, Richard, the media, they're cherry-picking the quote from Putin. The way I heard it, and I actually heard his speech, was he's saying, look, the West and these people that are back in Ukraine are making every move to start a nuclear war. And so he says, let me make it very clear, I'll go on the record, that if they want to start a nuclear war against Russia, Russia is fully capable of responding with nuclear weapons. Now, that's a thoroughly logical and obvious thing, right? Hey, it's just that we in the West are so propagandized. I mean, what it is like, it's like the only adult in the room. I mean, what Putin is saying is, look, we know that you are psychotic. Your leaders are psychotic. But we still are not going to let you forget that as psychotic as you think you are, you're going to start a nuclear war against Russia. We're going to go on the record and tell you that, guess what? You might be psychotic, but if you start a nuclear war, we're going to fight back. So I don't know why that's so controversial. What do you think?
Paul?
Well, that's true. You know, it's not the United Russia who has, you know, lots of military bases surrounding United States, is it? You know, it's the other way around. You know, how dare Russia put their country beside our NATO bases? You know,
exactly.
And so Putin's reminded them. Simple, you know, don't get any ideas. You know, if you cross the line, we will strike you at Dumo, as they say in Russia, at home.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, it's only controversial if you're a psychopath. Like,
exactly.
Wait a minute. Okay, if you're going to start a nuclear war, wouldn't that be obvious to someone who's a logical, intelligent person? The other thing is, maybe I get James' feedback on this. So I had this thought about, you know, the media, Western media is saying, oh, my God, 87% of the vote. I mean, Putin got 87% of the vote, okay? And they're mocking it, whatever. But in the United States, we have a system, since whenever, which they rigged, where it's only two parties, no matter what happens, no matter what the conflict, no matter war,
exactly.
peace, whatever.
Exactly.
It's only two parties. And,
exactly.
and so what does that guarantee? It guarantees that whoever wins is only going to win by a few points, right? It's going to win by 7 points, 10 points, maybe a landslide, 15 points, right? But in a system which I think is actually even more really democratic, like what they did, these elections they just held in Russia, in my opinion, you might have an 87% of the vote because it's not a rigged system where there's only two parties that are going through the kabuki dance of pretending that they're representing the people in the country. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, their elections are probably more genuine than ours. But you see, we, like I said, I was just listening to a guy earlier talking about, you know, still maintaining this, even this BS that, you know, Russia is, for what they, you know, for what they lack in, you know, they're losing this war militarily, they make up for it in propaganda. I mean, Russia is on a war footing because it's an existential threat for Russia. It's not an existential threat for the United States, who's got the Atlantic Ocean between it and Europe before you even get anywhere near Russia. So, of course, Russia are winning the war. They've got more manpower. They've been systematically decimating the air defenses. A lot of the young Ukrainian men don't want anything to do with this. They've been fleeing the country. They've got man shortages. They've got artillery shortages. They've got every problem you could possibly imagine. Yet you get these people still maintaining, now, Russia's failing militarily, and they have to rely on a propaganda war, and this victory, this election victory for Putin's all part of the propaganda. I mean, they never stop, you know, and it's, unfortunately, I think it's going to have, it's going to take, now that Putin has got this 6 years, another 6 years, I think you're going to, you are at some point going to see an actual offensive from the Russians, because what I understand, what they've been engaging in is in a, they call it aggressive attrition. And it is right. very methodical. But the thing is, they have been, you know, incrementally and then sort of, you know, increasing the destruction of their air defenses. So, you know, once they're completely obliterated, well, Russia's going to be able to do whatever it wants. I mean, apart from these little incursions and these little kind of attacks, which are almost like kind of paramilitary attacks, they're almost like terrorist attacks. You know, Russia's doing what they want, really, you know? And then, of course, the same thing, like I said last night, on the one hand, you'll have one panelist talking about the aggressor, the new Stalin, he's coming, the Russians are coming, they're coming to take over Europe. And then the next thing they say, the Russians are inept, they're incompetent. They've only taken 20% of Ukraine, and it's taken them 2 years. The Ukrainians are much stronger than they thought. They're useless. You know, so by their own admission, they're suggesting it would take 10 years in total for Russia to occupy Ukraine, such as their ineptitude and incompetence. And then they sort of try and convince you at the same time that they're so powerful that they're going to take over Europe. It's like, and the other thing is, oh, you know, Putin, this is why Ukraine needs NATO membership. Putin wouldn't dare invade a NATO country. On the other hand, maybe even the same person on the same talk show or one of their colleagues will suggest that we need to stop Putin in Ukraine so he doesn't come and take over Europe, where all these NATO countries are. You know, you can't have it both ways. He's scared of a NATO country, but he's going to take over Europe. He'd have to attack all the NATO countries to take over Europe. I mean, it's just insane.
I know, it's preposterous. Well, let me ask a question. What is your take on this Macron psychopath and his statements lately? I mean, I really am perplexed by what he thinks he's trying to do. Does he really believe that anybody in France would actually want to be able to send French troops? I mean, the whole country of France is rebelling. But I guess that doesn't really matter in the West, right? Because the oligarchs are ruling, and it doesn't matter what people say.
Yeah, Macron's like the guy in the bar, you know, like I've said before, you know. He realizes it's never going to happen. His own military would never allow it to happen. But he's taking the opportunity to sort of make himself sound like he's the big tough guy. You know, let me at him. But he's got like, you know, 15 security guards between him and the guy. Oh, let me at him. I'll tell you, if you get security guards, will get out of my way. I'd give this guy what for? Yeah, you're lucky. You know what I mean? You're lucky these security guys are here. That's what Macron's all about. He's a smug little bluffer. He knows there's no support of it. The whole idea of NATO being united is a joke. You know, it's like the sort of divisions within the European countries and the differences between the European countries is you know, remarkable. You know, you're not going to be able to get an easy alliance. And, you know, as Alexander Mercurius said the other day, even if Macron was successful in, you know, trying to get the French and his little coalition of the willing, which he referred to as the coalition of the irrelevant, you know, because these little Baltic countries, Estonia. Oh, we're going to go in with Estonia, you know. Oh, I'm sure Putin's terrified. But he knows it's all theater. He's trying to position himself as like some sort of leader of Europe, not, you know, and it's a clown show, and it's a smug clown, or it's a cringeworthy clown show. He knows nothing's going to happen. The French military wouldn't even allow it, and the French people wouldn't allow it. So it's just a tough guy act, you know, because he likes to act the tough guy.
It's just getting more ridiculous by the minute. I'll just say one last thing. Slava Russia. Slava Putin. Thanks, Richard and Paul and James. Good to hear you all of you tonight. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Joe. Well, do you think the elections are fairer over there, James, as Joe was asking?
Oh, yeah. I'm sure that democracy is doing its job. How about a million Chinese flooding into Europe to attack? How's that sound? The Russians won't do it. The Chinese will.
We'll have more comments on that. Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Richard. Thanks, Paul.
I
know.
Thank you.
And always a pleasure, Paul. Yeah, thanks for being here at this hour. And yeah, look forward to your show Sunday.
Thank you, Richard.
Cheers. That's 1 p.m. Central Sunday for Paul Edward Stevenson with Last Man Standing. Please support RBN, folks. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on that donate page so we will speak again soon. Transcend the construct. Regards.
Hi, Tom Bolton for Ease Off. I know so many of you are finding our EZ4 carcass drop and lift an essential tool for your meat processing operation. But today I want to spotlight four of our new products. First, our right height hog cradles with steel or aluminum frames. Our customers love this back-saving innovation that enhances sanitation and speeds production. Next, our beef cradles with stainless steel or aluminum frames eliminate rust and corrosion. We hope you'll compare our quality and prices for this essential part of your processing line. Our cradles are especially effective when used with our power skinner. And finally, our hook tumbler will keep your hooks clean and polished. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC, 417-932-6419.
You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today because you can handle the truth.